Welcome to MGO Podcast 6.13. I know you're probably a little depressed by the end of the football season and what it says about you as a person, but just think about this. Riley O'Toole on a camel, ambling through the Northwestern defense. They're bouncing off him because they can't tackle him because he's just too unbelievably drunk on his camel. Just parading through Northwestern. Hopefully this is irrelevant by the time you hear this podcast, but Bo Pelini has been fired.
And Brady Hoke is not.
Swift, decisive action by Nebraska getting rid of a guy who wins 9 games every year. Again, like, nobody hates a 9-win coach more than Nebraska.
Yeah, they're really out to get those guys.
Bo Pelini is, of course, outraged. But it's over. Michigan season is literally over, and it seems highly improbable that Brady Hoke's era is over here. It wasn't as in the face as it could have been.
Yeah, it was shockingly competitive for long stretches.
Like, after Gardner threw that interception on like the second offensive play, I was like, all right, here it comes in the face. And then it surprisingly wasn't so, because Brady Hoke's teams always played, I guess, equal to it's either over their head or under their head. They've never really achieved expectations, because in the first year they were supposed to blow them out, right?
Yeah.
And that was also a narrow game. So they only play narrow-ish games against Ohio State. This one got a little unnarrow after the fumble by Gardner that was returned for a touchdown.
But up until the last 4 minutes.
It was a competitive game. Up until the point at which their offensive system got their best running back one-on-one with Jake Ryan for a touchdown, it was a competitive game. But there was, of course, the one thing that it's just like, you can't have a head coach who does this. At the end of the first half, Michigan is punting the ball, and Urban Meyer makes a mistake by not taking a timeout. And then Michigan punts the ball with 15, 16 seconds left on the play clock. And so you think about those 15 seconds when Ohio State scores a touchdown with 7 seconds left. And they did have 2 timeouts, but the way that they were running their offense efficiently,
the clock was stopping anyway.
As they were wont to do. I mean, there were a couple of points at which they picked up first downs, and then the clock rolled for 2, 3, 4 seconds. And one of those might have been a timeout. But at the same time, it's just 15 seconds you handed them, and they would have probably had to play it differently and settle for a field goal if you hadn't have gifted them those. And this is something that happens seemingly every game, where at the end of the first half,
I don't even know if it's seemingly. It might be literally every game at this point.
There are probably a couple at which this hasn't happened. But at the end of the first half, there's just ludicrous clock antics, like Michigan almost missing the opportunity to get a field goal in the last game. Like the timeout with 3 seconds left to give Penn State a free shot at the end zone. just increasingly overwhelmed. And when he first got here, we thought that Brady was actually maybe ahead of the curve on this stuff, because he was very aggressive on fourth down.
Mm-hmm. Boy, were we wrong.
And that is a good thing that he's done, but it's also increasingly the conventional wisdom for everybody who's not named Rod Gilmore. Rod Gilmore is just a dinosaur in the booth, just being like, what's that thing coming down at me? It's hot. I like it.
He had some very confusing college football playoff analysis that I caught and then tried to tweet about, and then just led to more confusion.
Yeah, I didn't understand any of that. What was he talking about?
I still can't tell you. It was something about Virginia Tech and whether or not it was a quality win, and something about a bowl team, and he lost me, and I just, you know, saying that Ohio State's win was more impressive over Michigan than Baylor, you know, barely squeaking one out against Texas Tech. And it was like, have you watched Michigan this year? And did you see how competitive that game was for most of it?
Yeah.
It was just, I don't know. It was really stupid because it was Rod Gilmore talking about football.
Is he the dumbest, like, color guy that you can think of?
Joey Galloway's got to be in the conversation.
Yeah. Wasn't Rod Gilmore a coach?
And he was a coach. That's terrifying.
I think he was a coach somewhere.
Looking this
Google,
up.
Google,
right
Google,
now. Rod Gilmore. He is a practicing attorney, which also concerns me.
What?
Yeah, he's actually, yeah.
He's a practicing attorney.
Yeah, a law degree from UC Berkeley in 86.
From Berkeley?
Yeah. Graduated from Stanford before that. He was involved in the play.
This is the smartest dumb guy ever.
He speaks fluent German, according to Wikipedia.
And he thinks that, like, 4th-and-3 on the 30 is punting.
Yeah. His wife is the mayor of Alameda.
Big Ten! It's not even Big Ten.
I don't care. It's still Big Ten somehow.
Wow, that went in a direction I did not expect it.
That's for sure. Wow.
Wow. Wow. What were we talking about?
I don't know anymore.
Okay, we should talk about the game some more. So, you know, Michigan's offense actually looks
competent
for most of this game. The one place where they did not look particularly competent was at offensive tackle.
Yeah.
Which is not, I don't think it was a surprise for anyone. I mean, Bosa's got 11 sacks.
He's a monster. They had a couple stunts that freed up guys pretty easily.
Yeah. And Michigan just hadn't seen that level of pass rusher probably all year. He had a freshman and a redshirt sophomore who's kind of struggled a little bit going up against those guys. And I wasn't happy with it, but I also wasn't surprised.
No, I mean, Joey Bosa is going to be a top 10 pick probably in
that does do
years.
Not eat.
Yeah.
But other than that, the offensive line looked quite good. Like, everybody is up on Drake Johnson's jock, but to me, I was looking at that and just being like, wow, there are holes. There are lots of holes.
Yeah, no, I was shocked by it. And actually, that was the one area where I thought that the tackles did okay. Where there were a couple plays where Ben Braden was actually blowing some guys pretty far off the ball on some of those outside runs where there was push. There were holes. And it was a little surprising because I expected Ohio State's front four to really
whip them,
win that battle.
Well, I think that the tackles had a little bit of an advantage when Michigan's running the ball just because Ohio State's ends tend to be a little irresponsible. And
they like getting upfield, yeah.
Yeah, Noah Spence was very much in that mold. And I think that the guys that they still have there are less likely to be responsible against the run, and that helps them get to the quarterback. But even so, we had been wondering if the late uptick in Michigan's rush offense was at all realistic or if it was just a reflection of the fact that they were playing teams like Maryland and Northwestern that don't have very good defenses. And Ohio State's defense has been pretty good on the ground all year, and Michigan ground out an acceptable day against them. So I think their progress on the offensive line is real, and next year we're going to see them hopefully rounding a unit that you could call good-ish because they don't lose anybody. They literally have everybody back.
Yeah, I'm wary of any predictions about the offensive line, but
They've gotten better.
Yeah, I've just been trained, but there is real progress. I mean, there really is, and that's quite something. I mean, the fact that they're getting Drake Johnson to turn look at like a pretty decent running back. You know, there was a play in the game on Saturday where he went on an outside run and he went to come inside and he did the thing that I saw him do in high school that made me think he wasn't a Division I running back, where he had to stop completely to make a cut.
Yeah.
And that was, and you I know, everybody's that, freaking but out about Jake Johnson. It's like, well, if you can get him running in a straight line, sure. But, Michigan's been able to do that. And and that's almost all on the offensive line. And then, Drake Johnson's fast and kind of big.
He's also going where he should go.
Yes. He is hitting the right hole.
So that is an asset that I didn't really think was one.
we're learning as we go along about what it takes to be competent.
So, and after he went out, Michigan didn't really have many opportunities. Devion Smith got buried in the backfield, but that was not on him. That was on the offensive line, putting a guy in his face. But, we'll see if he can maintain this when Derek Green's back, when Ty Isaac's eligible. But he's definitely put himself in the conversation.
Yeah. I mean, he's viable, which is probably more than most expected.
He does have that weird thing where sometimes he just comes to a dead stop because he needs to change direction.
Yeah. He is not particularly agile.
Yeah. But, hey, man, and we're not looking at a Adrian Peterson coming into this program next year. So we'll see.
Are we looking at anybody coming into this program next year?
Well, if they replace the coach with some other guy who
hopefully does some recruiting things. Yeah.
We'll see. They threw it to Funchess deep, and I was like, hey, that worked.
Yeah. My reaction to that was almost like Chris Farley and the Coffee Crystals sketch from Saturday Night Live.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Where he gets handed this cup of coffee and it tastes good, and then they tell him that it's not actually coffee, but it's these like fake coffee crystals. And he goes from smiling to just the smile wipes off his face, and he just goes, "You son of a bitch." And it was like, it was just like, yeah, you know, it was nice that we did that, but man, where has that been?
Yes, I was frenemies with that play where it's like, hooray, we got some yards. And I was also like, why haven't we seen this since, I think, literally the Notre Dame game?
Yeah, I mean, they had the one bomb at Penn State where he had to snatch it out of a safety's hand.
Oh, that's right. That one.
And that was the last one. Maybe they thought that was too dangerous. But I don't know. For the second straight year, it's outrageously frustrating to watch a team that has not even really seemed to try to do anything on offense that would move the ball downfield. And then all of a sudden they're breaking all these new things out and actually throwing the ball downfield. And all of a sudden it's producing points against a good defense. And it's like, hey, maybe you should do this in the other games too. I don't know.
Yeah, and they ran Gardner to good effectiveness. And I know that he had an ankle issue earlier in the year, but I'm just very frustrated with how well that works and how Michigan seems to avoid it. Because, you know, ever since Tressel kind of moved them into the era of the mobile quarterback, Michigan just hasn't been able to hang. And a couple years ago, it was part of the season preview, one of the five questions and five answers on offense was, are we on the wrong side of history here? And I took so much crap for that. And I would like to give it all back. People who have given me crap.
Alabama's got a mobile quarterback at this point.
Yeah. I was watching I was watching the Iron Bowl, and Herb Street kept bringing up the fact that Alabama almost always goes no huddle now. And I'm just like, good God. Saban is now a no huddle coach. And, you know, that's what he hired Lane Kiffin to do. And that's kind of interesting that we got the guy who Nick Saban threw overboard so that he could
get on the right side of history,
use a mobile quarterback and win a shootout against Auburn, which they did.
Quite a shootout.
It was a hell of a shootout, but he's just like, all right, I guess this is how I have to win football now.
Yeah.
And he went and did it, and Michigan doesn't do that, and I'm sick of it, and we're on the wrong side of history. And so all you guys who are just like, man ball, like, no man ball.
Yeah, let's kill it with the man ball. It's been enough.
It's been enough. I keep getting emails from this one guy who says that we're idiots for wanting to fire Brady Hoke. And I blocked him, and he's just finding new emails to send. I didn't even tell him that I blocked him. I'm just like, come on, man. I'm not responding to them because of Dave Brandon, because I'm just like, I know that nobody can, like, FOA my emails, but nobody FOA'd Dave's. So I can't tell this guy how I really feel about him.
I'm not going to ask you how you feel about him right now, just so it's not put on the record.
I feel that his emails are not good emails, and I will not pay attention to them. That's what I feel. So, about the wrong side of history. So, Madison has been a very good defensive coordinator for Michigan.
Yes.
Except against Ohio State. So, Madison's defenses have given up 34, 26 points, 42 points, and 42 points. And there was a defensive touchdown in this most recent game.
Yeah.
But even so, two of those offenses Michigan was facing had freshman quarterbacks. Braxton Miller got 9 yards an attempt in the first Michigan OSU game under Hoke. They got 396 yards in the 26-point game, which was the only marginally acceptable performance that they had there. So, you know, I brought up earlier in the year, how good is this defense actually? And I think the answer is it's okay, but we've thought it's a lot better than it is, and the stats have said it's a lot better than it is because of the level of competition in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I mean, you go look around and see what those other Big Ten teams are doing when facing not Big Ten teams that can actually play some football, and that tends to end in a disaster except for the random inexplicable Indiana-Mizzou game.
Oh, and Notre Dame losing to Northwestern. Still the best thing. Oh, man. Right after the Moon game, they go out and beat Notre Dame. So, yeah. So, I don't know, man. I think we kind of have to suck it up and go to modern football. And people who are worried about transition cost should be more worried about the fact that you can't win that much.
Well, and as we're finding out, the transition costs keep building if you keep resisting the transition at some point. You know, if we keep putting this off and putting this off and putting this off, eventually you're just the dinosaur programs of all dinosaur programs, and modernizing becomes even more difficult.
So one of the misconceptions everybody has about Rich Rodriguez is he needs a Denard Robinson.
Andrew Solomon's a pretty good counter argument, right, for that, because he's not a blazing runner. He's more of a passer than anything else.
Yeah, he's mobile, and you know, he had Sean King at Tulane, and Sean King was a passer, and he's had success with the Pat Whites, and he's had success with the Denard Robinsons, but he also had success with guys who are not electric on the ground. And there is going to be a transition cost, but you know, Morris is mobile enough to do some zone read stuff. Malzone is probably mobile enough to do some zone read stuff. Spate, probably not.
No.
But, you know, we've seen Spurrier's effective offenses at South Carolina. Mix in these guys who aren't super athletes, but you spread them out and you keep the guys honest. I mean, the thing that really drives me nuts about Ohio State is you go up against them and they always put one guy in space trying to make a play, and you have one guy in space trying to make a play, and eventually you're going to lose. So Michigan had a 4th-and-1 that they were facing on defense that Jake Ryan had a chance to make a play on. He didn't make a play against a good player, and boom, it's game over.
Yeah.
So that came with Cardale Jones on the field. I mean, they can still have an effective offense even when they're down to their third string. We ain't here to play school quarterback. How many times did you see that in your Twitter feed when he came in the game, by the way?
Far too many times. It got a little old.
Yes. More than a little old. But that's an offensive system that you can still have success with. I mean, last year, Kenny Guyton played a bunch of snaps, and they were still very effective on offense.
Yeah, and look around for Kenny Guyton right now. I mean, you know, I think he tried out for the CFL. It might have been the UFL. I mean, like, you know, he's not
an electric talent.
No.
But he knew how to run their offense, and their offense is just very, very difficult to stop. And, you know, in the game preview, I made a comparison between it and Beeline.
Which was kind of a devastatingly on point comparison.
Where Beeline just wants dunks and threes, right? And that's all Ohio State's offense is. They want really easy run plays and real easy quick passes to the sidelines that make everybody honest, and then they go for the kill shot.
Yep. And bombs to Devin Smith. And man, do those things work.
Yeah, and, you know, Taylor got burned on two of the big plays that we saw in this game. Of course, there was the bomb to Devin Smith, and then there was a second and very, very long on which he had an opportunity to make a stop right before halftime, and he missed a tackle. And if that tackle's made, it's unlikely that they get that touchdown. But again, they put you in space. They ask you to make plays, and that's very difficult for a defense to do consistently.
Yeah, because, I mean, all it takes is one guy messing up once.
Yeah.
And it's a big play. Michigan, it just doesn't seem like they ever put opponents in a position where one guy messing up a little bit is going to, it might cost them 5 yards, it might cost them the first down, but, you know, a touchdown, it just doesn't seem like, unless they're throwing it deep to Funches, which they never do.
Well, that's what the innovation of the spread has always been about. It's that you have a ball carrier, and then you have two guys for that ball carrier on offense, because the quarterback doesn't really have to be accounted for that much. And now, with the defense that makes you account for everybody on every play, you've got one guy, and that guy had better be in the right hole, and he had better make the tackle. And if he doesn't, you're going to get a big play on your face.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the turnaround, one of Michigan's best plays the entire game, was on some sort of option play. Mario Ojemudia basically played both sides of it, and I don't think Ohio State, I think it was when Cardale Jones was in, and I don't think he made the correct read, but Ojemudia managed to make a tackle where he was one on two.
I remember that play, and I thought as it happened that Jones messed the read up and should have given to the back. But we've seen Jake Ryan successfully play both sides of that. So it is possible if you know what's coming.
But it requires a phenomenal play by a defender.
And the thing about the Meyer offense is it keeps taking the reactions people have to their offense and making little tweaks so that those are big plays. Reminiscent of what Rodriguez did at Michigan and what he's doing in Arizona. The 10-2 division champ, Arizona Wildcats. You know, I'm fine with it because the problem is here.
Oh, yeah. And I'm happy for Rodriguez.
Anything that makes that clearer. I mean, I'm happy for Rodriguez too, but it's better for us.
To be proven wrong.
Yeah. For people to be able to point at Rodriguez before Michigan and after Michigan and say, you know, this is a program that really needs to get it together. And I would hope that everybody who was either blaming him or still against him would look at his record, look at the fact that, you know, they love him there. Like, yeah, he yells at his players. And then his players go on to do good things. Yeah. And if that was a problem at Michigan, then that was a problem with Michigan.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, there are flaws with looking to the national media for in-depth analysis of a specific program because, you know, they're not, you know, they're familiar with it on a surface level.
Yeah.
But when you have kind of a universal opinion about something that may fly in the face of what people close to the program think, often that says more about the program than about the national media people who are looking at it from afar. And in this case, the just consensus reaction is to point and laugh at Michigan for getting rid of this guy because how could you possibly screw this up? And that's, you know, hanging out on Twitter while Arizona is winning their 10th game and heading to the Pac-12 title game, there was a lot of like, hey, look, Michigan, this is what you could have had. And you messed it up. I mean, what's wrong with you? You chose Brady freaking Hoke over this guy. And that's, I mean, I understand that the defense has reached a quality that was somewhat unacceptable, but there's also the factor of Michigan not ponying up for Jeff Castile.
Well, I mean, there's a number of different things there. So the job that Rodriguez did at Michigan combined with the sabotage that he suffered did mean that he needed to go.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't going to work here.
Oh, yeah. At that point, it was not going to work out.
And he made a lot of bad decisions on his own that led to his downfall. But the thing is that Rich Rodriguez learned.
You know? A novel concept.
He's like, well, that didn't work. What did I do wrong? How do I fix that? And so he went and got Jeff Castile. He replaced all his defensive assistants. And Tony Gibson is now nearly shutting down the Baylor offense for some reason as West Virginia's defensive coordinator. And it's just, I want to see Michigan learn. We'll see. I mean, they picked another CEO for this interim-ish AD thing, so who knows? It's really all in Hackett's hands right now, and he's a complete unknown.
Yeah, it is somewhat terrifying.
So instead of a guy who went and got Brett Bielema at Arkansas, or a guy who made a good hire in Steve Adazio, or a guy who went and got Bob Diaco, which seemed like a good idea at the time, at UConn, we've got a guy who has no track record whatsoever, and he's going to have one, and hopefully it's a good one, but we just have no idea whether it is or not. I mean, he's a complete blank slate.
Yeah. I mean, and I feel like with the athletic director stuff, some of the CEO stuff gets overblown just because Dave Brandon was such a...
an outlier.
Yeah. I mean, there were protests about the athletic director. That is friggin' unprecedented. Like that really just does not happen anywhere else except here because it reached such an absurd point. Having your athletic director sit in on coaches meetings is something that I don't think anybody else has ever heard of happening.
No.
So I have some faith that Hackett can't possibly be as bad as Brandon because Brandon represents the absolute worst in athletic director history, it seems.
Yeah.
By the same token, he is an unknown. They didn't get a guy with any sort of track record. And while Michigan has had success, I mean, the four athletic directors prior to Brandon, I think, their background was not in athletics before they were at Michigan. You have to go back, I think, to Weidenbach to get a guy.
Yeah, but one of those guys was Tom Goss.
That did not work out well.
I mean,
it worked out quite horribly, in fact. But Bill Martin, you know, if you take his tenure on the whole,
I know, but Bill Martin was also on the USOC. He was like the king of the sailing federation or whatever it is.
Yeah, he had some experience there. But in terms, but like how relevant that is to hiring a football coach specifically, I'm not
well,
so
sure. I mean, if you go look back at Bill Martin, he did almost everything very well except for acclimatize Rodriguez and get people on board. He just thought that if he hired this guy and then went away,
everything would
be fine.
Yeah.
And, you know, he underestimated the insanity of the Michigan alumni player base. Which, okay. I mean, he also put the athletic department on sound financial footing, hired John Beilein, and, you know, redid both the football stadium and Chrysler in ways that are excellent.
Yes.
Like, even the PDC was him. Like, everything about Chrysler that is in there right now, Bill Martin did, which is kind of mind-blowing. Because I was going to go back, and I was going to go give Dave Brandon credit for this thing that they did to Chrysler. And I like type in PDC approved, and I was like, Bill Martin gets PDC best the regions, and like there's a picture of it, and it looks exactly like the PDC. I'm like, okay,
I'm really trying here, guys. Right, really trying.
I'm trying to find some things out. but at Martin, I think it's a bad rap because he did poorly in the football search.
Yeah, the sailboat thing. He's never going to live down. Obviously.
No, and like. You know, there were reports that Carr tried to retire after the end of the previous season. He also tried to retire at a point that would lock in Mike DeBoard as the next head coach. And I'm just like, well, he did avoid that.
And that was a plus. Definitely a plus.
But he was obviously unprepared for Carr to retire after the next season. And it's just like, come on, man. But, I mean, the end result of that was obviously a very good football coach, so... I would prefer that to hiring a guy with a less than 500 record and no real qualifications other than we think he's nice. I mean, that's the thing that people say about people when they can't actually think of any good qualities. He's a nice guy. And?
it's about as backhanded a compliment as you can get when you're talking about somebody's qualifications and something other than being nice.
Yeah. Well, it bothers me when people bring that up. Like, oh, Brady's a great guy. Because it implies that all the other football coaches are not. Like, it's more of that, this is Michigan, we're better than these people, arrogance.
Yeah, I thought Rich Rodriguez was a real good guy when it came down to it. You know, based on the people he brought in, the program he was running. I mean, yeah, he yelled at people, but that's called coaching football.
Yeah.
And, you know.
I mean, there's people out there who are probably not real great guys. I'm not a big fan of Jimbo Fisher. I think Jimbo Fisher is probably a bad dude.
I'd lean towards agreeing with you there.
But, like, Bob Stoops... You know, Jim Mora, they're like everybody who does this for a living got into it because they thought they wanted to do it and they didn't ever think that they were going to get paid.
Yeah, you got to really work your way up. I mean, maybe Mora is a bad example because his dad was an NFL coach.
Yeah, Mora is a bad example, but people seem to like him and he seems to be a good person. Yeah. And that is just such a base qualification. We're like, oh, I feel so badly for Brady. He was an incompetent who was promoted into a position he had no business being in because of nepotism. And, you know, if I feel bad for that guy, I feel bad for the 49ers owner who's a 34-year-old who was born on third base and thought he hit a triple, who might fire Jim Harbaugh because Jim Harbaugh is not good enough for something. So I don't feel bad for people who got lucky. And
especially $4 million lucky.
And got to perform at a job that they had no business being in. Sorry. I guess.
Tough break.
Yeah. Do we have anything else here? I don't know. Don't think so. All right, let's come back and talk about some basketball. Basketball. Hooray.
Yeah, let's talk about this.
So the most recent game was a walkover of Nicholls State in which Michigan ran out to a huge lead and then got sloppy in the second half. So, you know, the box score there has 10 offensive rebounds for Nicholls State, but I'm not really concerned about that because...
No, I mean, in the first half, they looked like a team that get run out of the IM building, so it was going to be tough for that team to keep up a certain level of intensity for 40 minutes.
Yeah, and, you know, Spike did that thing where he just kind of shoots out and grabs that pass at the top of the key. He did that 3 times, and they still weren't, like, aware that this was happening, and he almost had a fourth. And I'm like, Spike's very sneaky, but he's not that sneaky.
No.
But, you know, we again saw a game in which Ricky Doyle got most of the minutes at the 5. So he had 21 to Donald's 14. He seems to be emerging into the guy there. He was 6-8 from the field, and Donald didn't really get off much in the way of shots. He only had 1 field goal.
Yeah, and Doyle's got that. Yeah, he showed off that jump hook, which, I mean, I know he's going against like a 6'10", 195-pound, and I think 195 might be generous when we're talking about Nicholls State center. That dude was built like me. But that jump hook is going to work against anybody if you're able to fully extend and get that off in the paint like he was doing. And that shot was nice.
Yeah, he's got that down. He displayed it against a very athletic center from Villanova a couple times. By the way, I like how our podcast, like whenever we want to slam someone's physique, it's always like, he looks like Ace.
Yep.
That's because people who look like me don't get on courts. But
well, people who look like me shouldn't.
No. Doyle also came in with 4 offensive rebounds, which is double anyone else on the team. And he continues his very weird rebounding style where he gets lots of offensive rebounds, just being very McGarry in that department. And then doesn't rebound anything on the defensive end. He had 2 in this game, which is up from 0 in the tournament. But, you know, as we've discussed, Michigan sends everybody to the boards on defense, and the center's job is often just to body the opposing center into a place where he can't grab the rebound. So if you watch Michigan's bigs when a shot go up, they look at the guy that they're supposed to box out, and then they box him out, and they don't even look at the ball until it comes off the rim. So I think the effectiveness of Michigan's center rebounding should be judged by the number of rebounds the opposing center gets. And in this game, that was probably 3. So not great.
Yeah. I mean, you go and flip over to KenPom, and Michigan's 34th in the country in opponent offensive rebound percentage. And obviously you got to factor in the fact that they've played a lot of cannon fodder.
Yeah.
But so is everybody to this point for the moment. I mean, it's college basketball. Early season goes like this. So, I mean, we'll see. Water finds its level, and I don't expect Michigan to be top 50 in that regard all year. But they're off to a pretty good start, and that strategy seems to be working quite well.
Speaking of water finding its level, Michigan was 14 of 24 from 3 against Nicholls State, had pretty much the same quality of looks against Villanova, and went 6-21 in that game. So that was a very narrow one-point game that came down to a couple of goofy calls at the end. The block, I thought, was legit.
Yeah.
Totally legit.
Yeah, no, that was clean, very clean, and but spectacular. I couldn't believe he made that play.
But the fact is that just prior to that, Walton was driving to the hoop and got hacked, and they called it out of bounds off Villanova when the guy got all arm.
Yeah, poor damn Derek Walton. Because that's been a running theme all year, is that he gets to the basket and just gets slammed. And he's not getting nearly as many calls as he should.
It's, the reffing in that game was abominable. I mean, good Ricky Doyle pushed off. He grabs a rebound and he gets pushed. And because of that, he loses his pivot foot, and they call a travel, which is like quintessentially the kind of push under the basket that you need to call because it really impacts the game.
Yeah, it provoked a violation.
Right. And they let that go. And then Doyle and Dunnall are getting whisper fouls the rest of the game. It was just complete nonsense. And then that led to Max Bielfeldt getting 4 very critical minutes in which every offensive possession was like, well, let's go with the 6-7 guy.
Yeah.
And as we saw in the Michigan State game at the end of the last regular season in the Big Ten tournament, that doesn't go well.
Yeah, but opponents have identified that as a significant weak spot on Michigan's defense when he's out there.
So if anyone was thinking that the Bielfeldt thing is going to keep going on, not
against any team with a post.
Yeah. And then Chapman, can you give me Chapman's season shooting numbers? I don't think they're going to be real good.
If I must, he is 7 for 15 from 2, which is actually
really
slightly better than I expected.
Wow.
And 2 for 11 from 3.
And he hit two in this game, and he hasn't been missing by huge margins except real early when he airballed his first two threes of the season. So, yeah. But he's been bad.
Yeah, I mean,
let's just put it out there.
And the big concern is that he's not hitting shots at the rim at all. And that, I mean, not only is
that'll
he not
come, you know, like he's getting to the bucket sometimes, and he's putting up shots that look good. They look like they're not heavily contested. He's got the size to put it up there with that finger roll.
And occasionally he shows off a soft touch, or it's like, man, like that looked real nice. I mean, but sometimes he just looks a little overwhelmed down there.
You can see the potential. And ideally you'd be seeing it for 10 minutes a game as a freshman.
Yeah.
But Michigan's going to have to ride or die with him. And the most disturbing thing with him is that his defensive rotations
are not good.
I mean, we saw this from Irvin and Walton last year, where, you know, when they lost to Charlotte, I specifically remember Walton arriving late to a lot of three-pointers that went down. And now Chapman is taking that role. So this is a tough, tough defense for a freshman to learn, as long as they're not a center. So, you know, the hedging and the stuff with the center is kind of difficult, but you're always hedging and then you're recovering to your guy. So there's never a question about, am I switching?
Yeah.
And if you're one through four, though, there's going to be a lot of switches. And if you miss those switches, people are going to rain it on your face. And I think Chapman is going through an adjustment period where he's learning what he needs to do. And it's rough right now. That's just a fact.
Yeah. But like you said, they got to roll with him because, I mean, DJ Wilson is now dinged up and could not have looked more lost for the first handful of games this season.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if DJ Wilson has been dinged up in a permanent red-shirty fashion.
I mean, yeah, it would not be bad to get a shirt on that guy because he just...
He looked very overwhelmed, and he's a guy who might be here for 4 years afterwards. So, and he's also a guy who's got a ton of potential, so...
It'd be nice to get a fifth-year DJ Wilson, especially as opposed to a first-year DJ Wilson, which just does not look like he'll be able to contribute in any meaningful way.
No.
Because he's just got too far to go.
I mean, and even though they did lose to Villanova, I was encouraged by the way that game played out.
Yeah, I wrote up in the game recap, I thought that was about as encouraging a loss as you could have, and that people were mad about that, especially considering how...
Well, if you're
the end of the first half, early second half, where, you know, a very experienced team just socks Michigan right in the face, goes on a long run, Michigan can't get anything going. I mean, that was a game that could have easily gone the way the Duke game last year, where you're going against a very good team and they just run you off the floor and you take it as a learning experience. And instead, Michigan clawed their way back into it. And I thought that was an encouraging sign. Doyle having the game he had was very encouraging. The fact that Michigan was able to hang in that game, despite the fact that they were not hitting their three pointers. I mean, you know, that was a rough shooting game for Michigan and their defense kept them in that.
That is an excellent point. And Chapman does bring something that no Michigan four really has, where you can post him up and I'm like, okay, whatever. Like, I don't care about Cam Chapman getting posted up, and he still has, you know, that ability to find the ball when the opposition has it.
And, I mean, for all of Nick Stauskas' offensive prowess, he was not the world's greatest perimeter defender. And I think you can see the difference in Michigan's perimeter defense, where there are just not as many blow-bys this year, where guys are just getting around guards to the basket. And, I mean, LeVert, Irvin, and Walton have all done, I think, a pretty solid job of staying in front of their man. And the quality of the perimeter defense has raised compared to where it was the last couple of years.
Well, even more so than Stauskas, I think that having that perimeter defense consists of mostly guys who have been around.
Yeah.
Which was not the case.
Oh, experience absolutely plays a huge role in this.
And then you do have guys in Walton and Zach Irvin who have the physical makeup to be very good defenders.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have more length out there than you've ever had on a Michigan team. You know, they're not rolling out a Trey Burke, and we're once again stellar offensive player, and defensively, you know, had the little thing where he steals the ball at half court, and that was wonderful. But, you know, there were guards that, I mean, it was easy to see over him. Guys could get around him. More physical guards could kind of push their way towards the basket, and you're just not seeing that as much this year.
I think those deficiencies are mostly exposed on an NBA level for Burke specifically.
I think they are in an obvious way, but yeah. I think at the college level, I think there are less obvious factors because you looked at Michigan's team and it didn't entirely make sense why the defense was as bad as it was. And at this point, it makes a certain amount of sense why this group is better, where you've got this, you know, Spider-Man out there in Caris LeVert, who's now added the requisite size to the point where guys can't just blow through him to the basket because he can hold up physically. And you've got a guy who's disruptive. You've got just the overall length of the team where it's tougher to get through passing lanes. It's tougher to get around these guys. And, you know, Irvin's bulked up and he also looks noticeably quicker. I just think there's a step forward physically as well as in terms of the experience level that's adding something to this defense that Michigan hasn't had for some time.
Yeah. So who do we think? Is there an eighth guy on this team? I mean, to me, it looks like you've got the two centers and Spike, and then do we have a number eight?
I like what I see out of Aubrey Dawkins when they put him out there because he's just so athletic that he gets boards. I mean, we keep getting these pictures of him like 8 feet off the ground, yeah. It seems like. He's got a nice looking 3-point shot.
Yeah, if you leave him alone in the corner, he can knock it down.
And, you know, get him out on the break and he'll finish.
He's got no handle right now, though. I mean,
no, but, you know, that,
I don't think you need
Glenn Robinson didn't have a handle, really, you know, his first couple years. I mean, you know, he was a more skilled player than Dawkins, obviously, but, you know, they'd also be asking Dawkins to do much less as an eighth man. And I think there's definite viability there as somebody who can come in, give you spot minutes, grab a couple of rebounds, maybe knock down a three. That's, you know, for an eighth man, you can't ask for a whole lot more than that, especially out of a freshman.
Yeah, he did have 18 minutes against Nicholls State, got two offensive rebounds, two defensive, hit a three. I mean, just...
And the 3-point shot, I mean, it looks good. It's not one of those where it's like he's got a janky release he's got a good looking shot.
He looks pretty pure from the corner. So I could see him kind of being the guy. Mar / Rock, when he shoots,
it doesn't look good. I'm sorry. That guy's jumper is not, it's not there.
It's right not now. Just the jumper. I mean, I remember I was in Chrysler and I was like impressed with how Rockman got to the bucket and got a layup off, and he put it so hard off the backboard it barely grazed the rim, and I was like, ooh. So he's got to
slow down a little bit.
I think he's really nervous. Like, I mean, the guy was a stone cold scorer in high school, and like, it just feels like the game's too fast for him. He's just like, his heart's beating 1,000 beats a minute when he's in there.
But I also think just, I mean, if you're looking at Rock versus Dawkins in terms of who's going to emerge as an eighth man who's needed come Big Ten season, I mean, Michigan can get away with Walton and LeVert and Spike as their backcourt and have those three guys kind of rotating through. I mean, they might take on a ton of minutes, but I think they can get away with having those three guys basically handle all the minutes of the one and the two. But there's a pretty big hole at the, you know, for to have somebody come in at the three and four who can add something there.
Board a little bit.
Yeah, and Dawkins looks like he's got the potential to really provide something there. So I just think in terms of a role that's going to be needed going forward, I think Dawkins might be more of a factor than Rock. And I think also in terms of just how ready they look right now, you know, other than being able to handle the ball, there's not much, and you know, playing passable defense. I don't know if there's that much that Rock is bringing right now just because he can't shoot right now. I mean, he can't finish when he gets to the rim. And at that point, what's he adding? And with Dawkins, there's something that he's very obviously providing on the boards right now. And if he's knocking down a shot,
I agree. You're being very long winded.
Yeah, sorry, I'm talking. It's basketball. I feel like talking. About
sure,
this.
No, that's fine. But like, yeah, we all agree that was the thing. So I have one complaint about the schedule here. For one, Nicholls State is not the kind of team that you want to play ever.
No, and they've got another one of those coming up at the end of next month in Coppin State.
Well, they've got another one against New Jersey Institute of Technology, which is just like, are you serious?
That too.
So these are the games that Brandon is scheduling because they are vaguely cheaper.
Like, yeah, you're blaming Brandon for something that Beeline did.
Beeline is not making the schedule like this, is he? I mean, like, I know that they're going to play like a bad team, but like playing teams of this level hurts your RPI, and you're not going to lose against like a team that costs 10 or 20 grand more. Like that Bradley series they had a couple years back was perfect.
Yeah.
Because that's a team that you're going to beat. And they even went on the road, and I was like, all right, this is a good idea. They went on the road, and that place was full. That was like a 14. I would go play there again. That was great.
That was fun.
But you know, you're playing these nothing teams, and Michigan's next game is against Syracuse. Michigan plays Eastern Michigan after they play Syracuse. Eastern Michigan is coached by a Jim Boeheim disciple who runs the same defense that Jim Boeheim does.
You might have wanted to flip the order of those, obviously. Right.
What are they thinking, man? Like, Eastern Michigan should have been this game.
Yeah, I agree. I think Beeline has some say in the schedule, and I think one thing he does like to do, especially since he knows his teams are going to be really young, is have some of those body bag games where you just don't have to worry about it at all, and you can get those freshmen out there for 20 minutes and let them work through some stuff.
There's body bag games, and then there's this. I know that a lot of teams do it, but I think it's just, well, for one, I mean, this is an athletic department bitch. Yesterday, Michigan plays Ohio State in the game, and Michigan knows of this. They know when the game is scheduled, and there is a home basketball game and a home hockey game on the same freaking day.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Not only was there not really a fan presence there, but I'm getting the basketball media emails, and we get one this week that's just like, for Nicholls State, it's just like, you guys are all either in Columbus or off this weekend, so we're not having availability. And it's like, well, yeah, obviously, because nobody would show up. This is just a massive waste of time.
And this game wasn't even on television. It was the BTN Plus broadcast, which is just the radio plus the scoreboard video, which somehow costs $10.
Yeah.
I don't know how that – I mean, I'm already paying for the Big Ten Network. The whole point of the Big Ten Network is that
I get overflow channels, and they were just showing the Minnesota-Wisconsin game on a second station, which seemed like a waste.
Well, they blacked it out for me, so at least there's that. But why on earth is this athletic department not putting these games on Sunday?
I don't have a reasonable answer to that, except that the Syracuse game is on Tuesday and they want rest. But
or Friday.
Then stick it on Friday because Michigan hasn't played since Tuesday. There's got to be some way to do this where you're not playing a game that, you know, it was the functional equivalent of not playing a game, basically.
Right, and this is
for
like
everybody but the players.
I mean, the thing about the hockey that drives me crazy is that they had a bye week 2 weeks ago. They did not play 2 weeks ago. And instead, there are two RPI games this weekend that I didn't want to go to because I didn't go to the Friday game because I was like, well, I could pick hockey or I could pick my family. So I picked the family, and then Michigan loses to Ohio State, and I'm like, oh boy, a hockey game. It's just, I mean, the way that they've scheduled this hockey season in particular is just, I feel like a dumbass for buying season tickets is what it is. So hopefully Jim Hackett looks at this and is like, you know what? A lot of Michigan fans are fans of multiple Michigan teams, and we're going to try to make this as cool as possible for them. Because no thought has been put into the basketball and hockey schedules and from the fan perspective.
No, I mean, it's like they think that the fan bases for those three sports are all mutually exclusive, and that's not the case at all. I mean, most of the people I knew who in college who were in the Maze Rage or in the Children of Yost were also football season ticket holders because everybody's a freaking football – well, they were a football season ticket holder. And, you know, you went and looked at the Maze Rage on Saturday when they panned out the camera, and, you know, they were barely able to fill up the just courtside section, which is tiny.
Well, and, I mean – that was literally a half hour after Michigan had lost to Ohio State. It's just like...
People don't want a sports at that point.
No,
we're done with sports. I wanted to sit down and watch football that was decent. Maybe, like kind of passively. I kind of needed a break from football for a little bit, but
yeah.
I was not eager to watch a different sporting event that I had to pay close attention to.
No, so yeah. That's some pretty good complaining right there.
Yeah, we're getting some good stuff
that's,
in right
that's
now.
Good complaining. We did it good. All right, let's call Jamie.
There's no use in me a-crying. I've done everything and now I'm sick of trying. I've thrown away my nights and wasted all my days over you. Well, you go your way and I don't mind. Now and forever till the end of time, I'll find somebody new. Baby, we'll say we're through, and you won't matter anymore.
We welcome in Jamie Mack, who just covered blog.com. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well, guys. I'm just getting acclimated to a world where Bo Pelini gets fired before Brady Hoke does.
That is what led the podcast off. We are in alignment here, sir. Hopefully irrelevant by the time people hear this, but you never know.
Yeah.
So things happened in the league this week. But most importantly, someone smoked a cigar very sexily. Congratulations, yeah. Jamie, on the old oaken bucket.
You know it. Second year in a row. First time since 1993-94 that IU has won the old oaken bucket 2 years in a row. And let the record show that the season for Indiana ended with scores on five of their final six drives. And they win a big rivalry game to avoid going 0-8 in the Big Ten. You know, I've actually been asked this a lot, you know, since the holidays, you see friends and families a little bit more often about Kevin Wilson. I'm surprised how many people ask me if he should be fired. I'm fine with him at least getting another year. I mean, I thought his quarterback thing was such a disaster. You know, at some point the season just became, you know, a non-entity. So I feel like we're punting on the whole season and on the whole fact there was no progress this year. But it was good to get a win at the end.
Illinois beats Northwestern to go 6-6 and acquire the hat, much to the dismay of bring your champions, there are meat. But Beckman, contract extension? Come on.
Clearly
already. I mean, yeah, 6-6. He was pretty defiant in his post-game press conference as far as winning six games. I think he said something to the effect that very few people thought they could even do that.
But there's a discarded...
Go ahead.
There's a discarded Florida head coach there for the taking.
Yeah.
He's got to go because they got to hire. What? Actually, that's not a terrible idea.
Yeah, it really isn't.
Like, if he could create a really kick-ass defense, which he seems to be able to do, that would put Illinois in pretty decent stead.
Riley O'Toole ran for 147 yards yesterday.
That's just what I was going to mention was, yeah, Brian's guy, Riley O'Toole, shredded him.
On a Campbell, just drunk as hell. He's just kind of like just kind of ambling.
I forgot we were thinking of him as Peter O'Toole.
Just ambling through the Northwestern defense on a Camel, just drunk as a skunk.
He never run longer than 25 yards, presumably because he couldn't keep going in a straight line for that long.
just kind of wandering. Just like a Family Circus cartoon with Riley O'Toole on a Camel and Northwestern defenders just exploding like they're stepping on landmines.
It's been a long
Northwestern,
year,
Northwestern started Zach Oliver at quarterback, and Riley O'Toole's counterpart did not fare well. There was a stretch in the first half where he himself had four turnovers on four straight Northwestern possessions. That pretty much gave Illinois all the field position they needed to open up a big lead in that game. And getting back to Beckman, I don't see how getting to a bowl game and winning three Big Ten games is enough to really keep your job. There's got to be upgrades out there if you're Illinois. But making a bowl game is not the most challenging accomplishment out of the Big Ten. You know, we have 10 spots. You know, it's just, I can't see how that would be the trump card here. So,
indeed, Michigan State blows out Penn State in the least surprising result of the week. They open the game with a kickoff return touchdown, and it pretty much goes as you would expect the Penn State offensive line against a very good defense would go.
Yeah, actually, Penn State, five of their first six drives got into Michigan State territory, and a couple of them actually started in MSU territory, but they only got 3 points out of those drives. So they were sort of hanging around in the first half, but they couldn't take advantage, you know, of any of those situations. They punted on fourth and 18 at MSU's 36 after a sack really kind of forced their hand. They missed a field goal. They punted a second time, actually, at, you know, in Michigan State territory after going backwards after starting in Michigan State territory. Yeah, they really struggled. Another poor performance by Christian Hackenberg, who is 13th. He ends the season 13th. If you just do conference game statistics, he ends the season in 13th place with 5.1 yards per attempt. Only Indiana's Xander Diamant is worse than him in that stat. That's kind of crazy.
It is crazy. I mean, it's somewhat explicable, obviously, because of the problems their offense has, but you kind of expect that it would have managed to work around those somewhat.
Yeah, there was some explosion early in the season in the passing game, but there just hasn't been in Big Ten play.
Well, one of Penn State's problems is that they have a bunch of tight ends, like, and they're running Gesicki, who's a freshman, out as a wide receiver. And You can make use of those tight ends pretty well if you have a running game. But they have no running game, so those guys are just slow wide receivers. So they're not getting separation. And, you know, their only hope was Gina Lewis, really, and he hasn't come through. So,
well, Hackenberg ended up with 15 interceptions this season. He had a TD to INT ratio of 8 to 15. And he threw a lot of interceptions. Well, I don't know a lot. I would probably have to look this up to see, but it seemed like he threw a ton of interceptions in the red zone and whatnot. And he threw another one yesterday. You know, they were driving for a score, and he threw a pick in the end zone. But he leads the Big Ten in interceptions. Well, he's tied, rather, with our guy, Devin Gardner.
So Michigan State is ticketed for one of these New Year's Day-ish bowls, right? I mean, second team out of the Big Ten?
I would think so. I mean, you know, the committee puts those matchups together as well, and I think that they still have Michigan State in the top 10. You know, and their whole purpose is to create good matchups. So I think they would be there. They were talking Orange Bowl on the broadcast yesterday as a possible destination. I don't know who they would be playing.
You know, it's possible that they would give him the rubber duck there, and I don't even know what that means. But what I mean by that is give him the Power 5 top ranked team, kind of like not a very sexy matchup. I don't know, because the Big Ten is bad, and Michigan State, I don't think, has a lot of Q value at this point, so they might give him like a, here's Marshall. Marshall lost, so
yeah,
Boise State.
Here's Boise.
Marshall lost, and I watched that happen because it was Thanksgiving, and my aunt and uncle are over, and they both work at WKU. So they were like...
So they had fun.
He
that
did.
Game was
she didn't
just
really
like the Michigan Illinois game in 2010. It almost ended on the same final score.
It was bonkers. It was kind of fun. It was like, oh, this is what it's like to be a fan of a MAC team. It's just like, you know, now that these teams are very good, but they don't play any defense. So there's this kind of like whiz bang quality. And if you want someone to win, it's a really weird way to watch a football game, because it's just like you need to hold serve, which we've. There have been games I've felt like that, but I didn't really feel it was like a way of life. And I think that's what it is being a Western Kentucky fan. But, hey, they're bowl eligible. 7-5. Go Hilltoppers. Go Big Red.
Yep.
All right. Nebraska, Iowa. Nebraska wins this game in overtime and promptly fires Bo Pelini.
They're
going 9-3. I mean...
With Tommy Armstrong as his quarterback, I mean,
I'm shocked by this move. And like, even if Scott Frost is a guy who you really want, and I think that they probably do, it seems to make more sense to wait a little bit longer, because, you know, Helfrich just got the job 2 years ago. Scott Frost only has 2 years as their offense coordinator. If you give Pelini a little bit more rope, you have a much better read on whether Helfrich is going to maintain. And, you know, maybe you get a more experienced version of Scott Frost.
Well, not only that, but one of the big criticisms of Pelini is that, as it related to Nebraska, was that, at least in Nebraska's mind, you don't want somebody's first head coaching job to be that. And that would obviously be the case for Scott Frost.
Well, Frost, I think, comes with sort of a Harbaugh level of, we're going to forgive all possible sins because he is Scott Frost.
That's fair.
But... I mean, I'm very, very surprised. I mean, Pelini was always kind of a controversial, fiery figure, but in the last couple of years, he seemed to kind of get a hold of that. Like, there was the whole cat thing where he figured out that faux Pelini was actually pretty funny, and and played to it. And he'd seemed to kind of turn the corner from just another, you know, jerk head coach to a dude who seemed like he was comfortable in his own skin. And I'm flabbergasted that they made this move.
Yeah, when the season started, that was definitely one of the storylines, was the 180, you know, that Plume's attitude seemingly had done, you know, in the public. You know, it was a calmer, more fun, you know, everybody got to see, you know, that side of him. I think the problem they had with Pelini was the sense that they maybe had hit a ceiling or they wouldn't be able to go much farther with Bo. They were 26-25 against teams that ended up with a winning record against Pelini, 8-17 against teams that were ranked in the AP poll when they played them. And, you know, they've had some critical November losses, but 10 losses by 20 or more points under Pelini, including in some key moments when they played Ohio State last time, last year against MSU, Wisconsin in the Big Ten title game, Wisconsin 2 weeks ago in the de facto division title game. You know, I think that I just feel like they probably felt like they were running in place. However, you know, he still won 72% of his games. So, I mean, you know, if you're Scott Frost, and it's interesting, he said this thing, you know, get absolved because of who he is, you know, he's got to somehow, rejuvenate Nebraska, but also don't dip below 9-3, you know?
And you look at Nebraska.
It's an easy situation because there's a lot of talent there, but, you know, you can't go 6-6 breaking in your own system at a place like Nebraska.
And you look at Nebraska's losses this year, and, I mean, you mentioned the blowouts, and other than the Wisconsin game, which was obviously a blowout.
Bad.
They had the other two losses were a remarkable comeback against Michigan State that they almost pulled off and only lost that game by five.
Would have been another double-digit loss.
And then a four-point loss to Minnesota, who's not bad this year. They are good. Those are the only two losses, other than the blowout to the Badgers, that they have on the schedule this year. It seems like they really did make progress, and they did that with a quarterback who's iffy, I would say, in Tommy Armstrong.
And coming back, and that defense is young and should be kind of consolidating. It's just a really weird time to make this move. Do we have anything to say about Iowa? Not really. They're just a Kirk Ferentz team that goes 7-5 because that's what they do.
And Kirk Ferentz is going to be there forever. So yeah.
All right. Moving on, Minnesota versus – no, wait. Rutgers played Maryland. Do we have a score on that? No, we don't have a score. We have no score. We have no idea what happened in that game. Moving on, Minnesota, Wisconsin. Wisconsin pulls it off. They will face Ohio State in a very winnable Big Ten championship game now. But Minnesota hung tough, and I was probably more impressed with them in this game than I was with any of their other games of the year, even though they lost this one. They didn't just hung tough. They were up 14-3 with one pass completion.
They were up 17-3 at one point.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Minnesota, I don't know if this is sustainable in a better Big Ten, but is a better Big Ten coming? No. So, but Wisconsin kind of took the mantle that everybody anointed them with early in the year, and they've managed to win the division without a functional quarterback, which I guess kind of goes – I mean, who's the most functional quarterback in the league? Connor Cook. Other than that, is there anybody?
No, I was going to say JT Barrett.
Well, not anymore. he has been defunctioned.
Yeah, I don't know.
Gary Nova.
I was just going to say that their quarterbacking is so shaky that I don't necessarily think that Ohio State is at a disadvantage at that position. You know, if you go position v position, which is sort of maybe not the best way to break down a game. You know, but I don't necessarily think Cardale Jones is any worse than either of the two Wisconsin quarterbacks.
Hard to tell. I mean, the one pass he did attempt was way wide. I think Wisconsin is Wisconsin, and their running game is devastating enough that an Ohio State team that showed some cracks against Michigan is going to give up some points. And then it's can Cardale cope, especially now that Wisconsin knows it's going to be Cardale. And Michigan kind of had a tough time adjusting their ideas of what Ohio State could do when he came in that game. But Wisconsin is going to prep all week for a quarterback who they are not going to fear the throw from. So yeah.
Interesting. It seemed like at the start of the year we were wondering about Ohio State's pass defense, but as the year ends, you know, it's their rush defense that's their weakest part. And they're going to. I mean, Wisconsin's rush offense is so fun to watch, isn't it? I mean, it's such a big play. Such a big play offense. It's no surprise they won the division, really. I mean, they had all the key games at home late here in the year.
Well, they're also just the best program mm-hmm. on that side of the division.
I think kind of getting back to Nebraska, that might just add to the angst to force them to pull the trigger. You know, I mean, I think Nebraska feels like they should be, you know, standing astride this whole, you know, division, and it's just that they're actually not nipping on the heels of Wisconsin as a couple of weeks showed. They're way behind the Badgers, it seems like.
Well, it's still a pretty weird move to make. Finally, Ohio State versus Michigan. Michigan doesn't get in the face as much as they possibly could have, but, you know, turnovers and the total inability to stop Ohio State's offense, again, doom them.
Yeah. Yeah, you know,
good points, Jamie.
They were in the game a little bit, right? You know, but, you know, I don't know. It's over. The season's over, finally.
Amen.
I mean, you know, it was nice to see them play a close game. You know, actually, as the third quarter went along, I kind of was like, oh, crap, they could possibly steal this, but, you know. Like, oh, man, I was not even going to get emotionally invested in this game. All of a sudden, I've got to get emotionally invested. Holy moly.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I got emotionally invested, and then I was mad. But at least I felt something. Like, that was interesting. I was like, hey, I'm watching football, and there's a feeling I have in my body.
Yeah, exactly.
It's fear.
I'm sure everybody has mentioned this before because I've seen it on Twitter and I'm sure you guys talked about it. You know, I mean, that's probably the top thing that Hoke has done in 4 years is that at least, you know, the Ohio State-Michigan games have been competitive and Michigan's had a chance to win them for the most part. But that's just the worst of worst immoral victory spins I could possibly put on it.
Yep. Well, if we didn't have
sure
moral...
You guys talked about it, but is the Nebraska search and Michigan search, I mean, they're not really going to be bumping heads, do you think, right?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so either.
Unless they kind of strike out on top targets and they're both going after Tom Herman. But, and then Herman.
You mean the Tom Herman Braxton Miller sweepstakes?
I don't think there's going to be a Braxton Miller sweepstakes. I think JT Parrott might not come back very well from his injury and might need another year.
All those reports that he was going to Oregon this week probably aren't going to pan out.
It'll be interesting to see what happens there. Who knows?
Football's over. We got the big ACC Big Ten Challenge. That's what we're focused on here around these parts. Right, guys? But, you know. Just had to get through rivalry weekend first.
Yes, and now it's over.
Yeah.
It's over. Ace, it's over.
Thank God.
It's over, Ace. It's over.
I can barely even muster excitement because it just,
You don't have to go to any more of those. You don't have to watch any more of those. No more of those.
I'm excited about that, but I'm more just angry that I had to do it in the first place.
Michigan football, everybody.
Think how exciting Tuesday will be for you, Ace. We'll be going to the Syracuse game.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah, I'm excited for that, legitimately.
Yeah.
I was not convinced by that, Ace. That did not really sell me on your excitement level. He's got nothing. He's out. I guess we're out, too. We'll talk to you next week, Jamie.
All right, talk to you later.
Yep, bye. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to the Amigo Podcast. I am Ace Sambender, along with Brian Cook, and props to Von Bell for catching that flag. That was pretty cool.
The game is over.